amor y entendimiento. ¿Y quién? La paz sembra semilla, la palabra que tiramos al viento. Y mi ciencia de la paz es solamente un poco de amor y entendimiento. ¿Y quién? La paz sembra semilla, la palabra que tiramos al viento. Palabras te traigo, me pegan, no me caigo. Hablo porque veo que la muerte acecha a diario. No soy la número uno, ni mi ego es mi equipaje. Solo vengo, represento y paso a todos un mensaje. Evitando al ignorante, esquivando al arrogante. Ayuda, gente, mira, vamos para adelante. Con lírica consciente, palabras que se sienten. Para todos los que moran la tierra de los vivientes. No pretendo y la vendo, la llama va creciendo. Mi voz te la va diciendo, la palabra se va expandiendo. Pisoteando a Babilón, Alica no se cansa. Yo no he nacido para no tener esperanza. Y va mi ciencia de la paz. Poco de amor y entendimiento. ¿Y quién? Encendedores en el aire, vales trayendo mensajes. Encendedores en el aire, Alica trayendo mensajes. Yeah, encendedores en el aire, trayendo mensajes. Encendedores en el aire, Alica trayendo mensajes.
Como le gusta a los menores, al obispo. Como le gusta la cocaína, al ministro. Esto es realidad, voy solo diciendo verdad. Mira, esto son solo pura diversidad. Y política, comercio y religión son las tres fuerzas que el Papa y Babilón tienen sobre el mundo. Yo, pero no podrán ocultar las revelaciones a las naciones, pero no podrán ocultar las revelaciones a las naciones. Y voy pidiendo un gobierno teocrático bajo el reinado justo. Es la raza para y al control de la creación con amor y verdad, sin lágrimas, dolor y enfermedad. No, encendedores en el aire, vales trayendo mensajes. Encendedores en el aire, Alica trayendo mensajes. Yeah.
smuggles. We not a me a big galley, but I mean I know them. Don't give up in the home. One by one, get a load of the fun. All of the ganja in the rum. Put it on a plane, the week on the stain. This money's gonna flow like rain. Bang bang, get it, 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 Mother of Sabal, say poor, poor, poor. This crisis, say don't cry no more. Bang bang, get it, 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 bang bang.
Stream of freakradio.org. Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the non-broadcasted edition, at least not at this point. As far as I know, our transmitter is still wandering around looking for a home, but we will get back on 101.1 FM as soon as we get the home we need. So give us a call. 427-4523 is our message line. Freakradio.org is our internet address, and you want to call me on air and chat about stuff, that's coming up on Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 427-3772. I'll be here, so call in, 427-3772. Coming up are special interviews on the Capitola rent control struggle. The struggle continues. And a report, yes, believe it or not, from Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry, recorded before the show to be sure he actually gets on the air. Wow, what a concept. Stay tuned.
You'll gather round me, people, a story I will tell of pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee. It was Saturday afternoon. his wife beside him in his wagon. It was into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife she overheard. Well, pretty boy grabbed the live chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun. In the fight that followed, he laid that deputy down. There's many a starving farmer, the same old story told, how an outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little home. Others tell you of a stranger who came to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day, there came a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you tell me I'm a thief. Well, here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Through this world I've traveled, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun, and some with a fountain pen. But as through this world you ramble, and as through this world you roam, you will never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
That was David Rovick singing a Woody Guthrie tune from his album Payday at Coal Creek. Selection of songs from America's Social History. Name of that one was about Pretty Boy Floyd. Hey, well, good evening, everybody. This is a two-hour show coming up on Freak Radio. And unfortunately, we are streaming rather than, as mentioned before, transmitting. And do give us a call if you have any ideas about a transmitter site. I'm not going to repeat what I said 4 minutes ago, but you got the gist of it. We'd like to be on the air. I'd like to hear you on the air, too, probably, just because I'm a little, lonely with my own voice echoing in the studio. Have a couple things coming up. I'm going to first do an update on the Capitola rent control situation. That's the destruction of the Capitola rent control masterminded by John Barisoni, city attorney for Capitola City Council, as well as the Santa Cruz City Council, the same guys who brought you the $100,000-plus lawsuit defending the arrest for the mock Nazi salute almost 10 years ago, is destroying rent control in Capitola, as well as they've done it in kind of following up on their victories over rent control in Santa Cruz at Clearview Court and De Anza. And I talk a little bit about that with my guest, who is going to be coming on shortly. Again, we recorded him before the show started, so we could make sure he stayed on and actually limit the time to some extent, because I tend to go on with this stuff, and sometimes I hear complaints afterward that it's taken too long. But you may recall, last week I had him on. This is an activist in Capitola who's kind of bedridden at the moment. And I'm trying to get my notes together here so I have it... So I have Rick Halterman's info. Rick has been working on this issue for, I don't know, one decade, two decades. And We had a relatively long interview about a week ago, 45 minutes, same evening as the Capitola City Council was scheduled to give the final death blow to rent control at the Surf and Sand Mobile Home Park, because it didn't want to bother spending the money, or it was tired of spending money defending rent control, even though a significant portion of that was being paid for by the renters themselves, and every prior lawsuit had been won. It's not a question of whether they're going to win or not. It's a question of how much they have to keep paying. They'd rather, turn a bunch of poor people and middle-class people out on the street than, not balance the city budget. I mean, we got to keep our priorities straight, right? I'm perhaps not being entirely fair to the Capitola City Council, or perhaps I'm being completely fair. You be the judge. In fact, I invite you to call in to talk about this at 427-3772. Before I do, though, let's listen to this interview and pick up on what happened. At the Capitola City Council, the issue was postponed until another member of the Capitola City Council, making, I guess, a complete complement of five, got back. There are five member city council. Stephanie Harlan, I believe her name is. I don't really know any of these people very well. I vaguely recognize the name of one or two of them. She's actually an opponent of ending rent control, a supporter of rent control in the mobile home parks in Capitola, which has mostly been gutted, as I understand it. But she was out of town. There's some speculation the reason that they postponed it was not out of the council majority's deference to her, but rather because they wanted to, they were a little worried about the extensive hostility in the audience in opposition to ending rent control. And also there was a lawsuit that came up on Tuesday around a previous rent control agreement they had with another mobile home park. Anyway, we're going to hear more about that in a moment, and we're going to pick up on that. You can pick up some of the background by going to the Mid-County Post website if you're on computer, which if you are listening to the show on today's show, which is September 1st, 2011, if you're listening today, then you'll be on computer. Who knows? We may rebroadcast this later, or you may be listening to it on the archives, which are kept at huffsantacruz.org. Believe it or not, even though we've been off that archive for a while, the archive is getting back up there again. Tip of the hat to those who are helping with that. Let's get into the interview again. We're going to listen to Rick Halterman and see what he has to say. So it's September 1st, 2011. I'm on the phone with Rick Halterman. Do I have that right?
Correct.
And Rick, you're a man who's been following the Capitola rent control struggle for mobile home parks for some time.
Yes.
And I know we talked on the radio, I guess, a week ago, more or less.
Yeah.
And you gave me the update. There was an unexpected delay in the Capitola City Council's final nail in the coffin for the surf and sand destruction of their rent control, right?
And I don't know whether they were waiting. The city just just won a court case. I don't know whether they were waiting for the results of that case. That's why they postponed it. They actually said they were postponing it because one council person wasn't there, but I don't really know if that's why.
And that was a council person who in the past had voted in favor of rent control against the majority,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, it was Stephanie Harlan. She's on the first reading of the ordinance to eliminate rent control, she was the only member that did vote in favor of the residents and not eliminating the rent control.
Now, what actually happened in court? I guess the issue had something to do with the conflict with state law, or
yeah, it was over second homes. The city had made an agreement with the park owner as part of the ordinance to the amended ordinance to allow him several ways to declare what was a second home, and if you were a second home, then you were no longer entitled to rent control. And so the issue went to court, and essentially with the rest, I haven't seen the trial brief, so I don't have any great detail, but essentially the residents argued what the city did went way too far past state law, therefore it wasn't legitimate. The court ruled it was a rent control ordinance, and rent control ordinances can be different, therefore the city was allowed to do what they did. So the court ruled in favor of the city.
So what's the significance of this?
It means those people that are determined to have second homes now are not going to have any protection under this agreement. The only good thing it might mean, and I have no idea because I don't know, I have no idea what the city's motivation is. Next week when they go to have the second reading of the ordinance, if the city's won this suit, they have less exposure, which means they have less reason to repeal what's left of rent control. But I don't know if they'll approach it that way. I'm hoping the people that go to the meeting will argue that, but I don't know what the city's going to do.
Have you heard anything from the people who actually attended either the trial or the last the Capitola City Council meeting?
I actually read the judge's brief on his decisions. That's why I know what he said. A couple of people talked to me about it, but they said essentially what I told you. There were a couple of little things, like there was an issue over a case from Sonoma, whether it applied or not, and the judge didn't think it helped him much, so he didn't use the Sonoma case. There were just little things like that. But essentially he said the city had the right to do their rent control ordinance any way they chose.
Now, Capitola does not have rent control for its ordinary tenants. Actually, nobody in this area does. But the county does have a relatively strong rent control ordinance for mobile homes.
Yeah, the county has a very strong ordinance, and the county has always been incredible about fighting for their ordinance. But they have the advantage of having a little more money to bring to bear. It's harder to intimidate them. Plus, there's a couple of people in the county council's office that are real experts on mobile home rent control, so they don't have to hire outside attorneys like some of the cities have done.
Now you said that that the Capitola rent control, as the Hollister rent control, or perhaps it's Gilroy, I always confuse
them. Hollister, Santa Cruz, and now have quit, and Capitola is looking at quitting.
They've destroyed rent control for their mobile home parks.
Yeah.
Has the county actually been fighting any lawsuits around this issue?
There have been a few. Like, there's a park in Soquel called Alamer, and their park owner tried to do what they call a forced conversion, and which is converting a park to a resident-owned park, although the residents really don't want to buy it. And that's the last big thing the county's been fighting, because they denied the request, so they were fighting that in court. But the county, as I say, the county doesn't get sued quite as often because they've always been so good about defending their ordinance. And so, as I say, they have more money and good lawyers. So you're much less likely to get them to back down like Capitola or Santa Cruz.
Now, how prevalent is mobile home rent control throughout the state of California?
I don't know exactly. I would guess probably about a third of the cities have mobile home rent control. Not a lot of counties. I think there's only like maybe four or five counties that have a rent control ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And this, of course, would seem to be particularly significant because those who live in mobile homes are, generally speaking, poorer than those who own or perhaps even those who rent homes.
Yeah, well, it's usually either seniors or people that are getting into buying something who can't afford anything more than a mobile home. So you're right, there's an awful lot of low-income people, one way or another, living in mobile home parks.
So you were just explaining to us on the radio last week the significance of this for the people in the mobile home parks in Capitola, several of whom have already either been bought off or actually bought out. As you mean bought out, it's put in a position where they're kind of screwed. They have some sort of temporary lease, and after that time, they don't have any rent control at all, and therefore they can't really do anything except sort of huddle in their mobile home for that period of time, and then after that, their children, any equity they may have, it's all screwed, right?
That's why it's very important for Capitola not to repeal their ordinance. Because, like, you're right. There's one park that's I think everybody in the park agreed to, although I can't guarantee every single person. But it's a 12-year lease, and they agreed to a $240 a month rent increase. But if people that live there, obviously, more than 12 years, if rent control is gone in 12 years, then they could raise the rent to anything they want. And then there's another park, the one where I live. Unfortunately, we were bought by a nonprofit, and our rents are going up $420 a month.
From a, what kind of a base rent?
The base rent, not counting water, sewer, and garbage, was around $230. Then when you add water, sewer, and garbage, it comes up to over $3. Now, the base rent has gone from $230 to $650, and so when you add on water, sewer, and garbage, it runs about, somebody just called me last night complaining they just got their bill. It was for $750.
So it's almost tripled.
It's basically about two and a half times of what it And what's the cost of triple, you're right.
What's been the impact in your mobile home park, which is not the one that, of course, is being specifically impacted?
What we're looking at right now is we're just going to find out, because this is the first month that the big rents have happened. And some people are going to get some help, and some people aren't. And so we're probably going to see about 3 or 4 months from now how it's going to play out, because the extremely low income and the very low income people are each going to get different help, but they're each going to get some help with the rent increase.
Well, the question really I have for you, and you may have, I think you have a sense of this, how has the destruction of rent control impacted mobile home parks in Hollister and Santa Cruz, and I guess we don't know yet in Capitola.
We don't know in Capitola.
But how in those two cities has it
happened? Well, in Santa Cruz, what essentially happened is everybody got a 34-year lease, so they could all stay there for 34 years. But it's non-transferable, and so a park owner is allowed to raise the rent to anything they want once the coach is sold. So essentially what happened in Santa Cruz is the mobile homes have no value. As long as you stay there, you're okay.
Plus, the average age of a mobile homeowner is like 70 or something.
Well, the answer they always said I was at meetings to help argue about this, and the people at the ANZ always said the average age in their park several years ago was 73. I don't know. I think at Clearview Court, which was the other park in Santa Cruz, it wasn't a senior park, so the average age there would be less, but I think it was mostly low-income people.
Do we know what the actual impact on the ground has been? I mean, have a lot of people left? Have a lot of people walked away?
At the end, some people have literally had to abandon their homes. Other people have been selling their homes to the park owner for $10,000 each. And remember, this was the end of where they were expensive. These were homes that people were purchasing for $250,000, $300,000 and have to sell them for $10,000 or abandon them. It's pretty brutal. And so, but that's essentially, I don't know the economics of Clearview Court, what's happened there. But I do know at the end it's been really devastating. And like I just saw an ad, and I think it was either this Sunday's or last Sunday's Sentinel, there was a mobile home at DeAnza for sale for $19,000. Well, I guarantee you someone paid over $200,000 for it when they bought it.
But that's
the effect. People just basically lost the equity in their homes.
So it kind of mirrors the foreclosure shutdown in a way.
It's just one of those things where there's an old formulation by someone who knows a lot more about rent control than I do, and he's always said for every $100 the rent goes up, a mobile home will lose $10,000 in value. And that formulation kind of holds when you're talking like $100 or $200 or $300 maybe. But once you get huge rent increases like they were doing at DeAnza, you know, $1,500, $2,000, you know, no one wants to buy the home at all. So you literally lose almost all the equity if you can get anything for it.
So what's the point of the, if that happens, what are the people at the DeAnza owner, not the owners, but the people who own the park, are they just going to sweep everything away and build condos? I mean, if they're going to lose, nobody's going to buy these mobile homes. They just want to, you know, sack them and set up, you know, I don't know, knick-knack shops or something.
I honestly don't know what they're going to do. The last I heard from someone at the park who seemed to be really up on things, but this was probably 2 or 3 years ago, we were on a radio station together, and at that time, 3 years ago, he told me that since the city quit on rent control, the park owner had purchased 13 coaches. So I don't know if he's continuing to buy coaches from people who can't sell them, so he gets them for almost nothing. His ultimate goal, I don't know what it is, but the land is right on the beach, so you're right. His ultimate goal might be to get as many people out as possible and then do something else with the land.
I mean, do we know if he's rented to other people? Are people paying the exorbitant rents that are being asked for?
Well, the advantage the park owner has, if he buys a coach, he determines the rent for everybody. So if he actually wanted to rent the coach, he could rent it for less than he charges the people that are trying to, you know, move into the park and buy coaches. In other words, he could rent his coaches for anything he wants, just like he can rent coaches that are sold for anything he
wants.
I don't know if he's renting them or not. I honestly don't know what he's done with them.
That would be interesting to find out if he's undercutting
he's
people.
Or not.
Maybe I can find that. In fact, we do have occasional listeners who live in DeAnza. If anybody knows...
Yeah, someone from the park knows, because I haven't really kept up a lot. I mean, I know one person, a couple of people from the park I've talked to.
And interrupting this interview just to clarify, in case people are getting a little confused, this is supposed to be about Capitola rent control, which is still up in the air as far as the Capitola City Council goes, at least for the surf and sand mobile home park. I'm comparing it and discussing with my guest the mobile home parks in Santa Cruz where rent control was destroyed, De Anza and Clearview Court. This may be clear from the tape, but I'm not sure that it is because we're both talking pretty quickly here, and I'm not sure that everybody is understanding. My questions are around, well, what's happened to these folks? You know, they suddenly rent control was destroyed. They were given these 34-year leases, some of them. Doesn't that protect them? I don't think it does. And I mean, I wasn't really asking the question that way, but I'm saying, are they? What are the people who are owning these parks doing? I mean, they want to drive everybody out because people can't afford to pay the rents, and so will abandon their homes and can't really pass them on to their children because they aren't worth the amount of money that you'd have to pay to live in them. Do they want to tear them down? Do they want to? What do they want to do? And of course, Rick answers that, well, they're, you know, they can, if a landlord wants, he can, you know, he can charge a much cheaper rent than the rent that he was charging the person to drive them away. It's kind of a, it sounds like a rigged game in a way. I mean, not just in a way, pretty clearly. Or he can just, you know, use it for something else, it being oceanfront property, and they're going to hear more about that. So, again, you're... Hope you're following this, and if it's if you want to call in with any comments or questions, and I am soliciting comments and questions, particularly about Santa Cruz, where this has already happened, thanks to a gutless city council, ready to be led by the nose by a city attorney whose financial priorities don't include a survival for the poorest of the people in Santa Cruz, those living in mobile home parks.
That's not something we ever talked about.
And you've, I take it you've heard no word from Clearview Court, which is kind of a lower-income area.
Yeah, I don't know. I say the only thing I know is the city worked out something similar to the answer for Clearview Court. I don't know if it was exactly the same. But I think Clearview Court also got long-term leases. And I just always assumed it was with the same provision that they aren't transferable. So when you sell your home, that's when you run into a problem.
Now, of course, the real question for me, as I talked to you about on the air before, is how can people fight this? How can they respond to it with any kind of effectiveness? You know, and I was always hopeful that De Anza, which had started a successful referendum...
De Anza did have enough signatures, but they didn't turn them in.
They chickened out, yeah, and I guess...
It was an elderly population, and I think a lot of people felt, well, two things. One, Santa Cruz was so weak, I think a lot of people felt if they turned in the petitions, then Santa Cruz would just drop everything, so they wouldn't even have their leases. And, but there were a lot of people that felt, you know, these are the last few years of my life. Do we want to spend them fighting this? And you can't blame them for that.
Well, you know, it seems to me that, I mean, that I understood that you said that before, and my response before is that if they can overturn the council's decision on destroying rent control, then they can insist that rent control be put into effect by initiative.
And, well, they could have done, you're right, they could have done the initiative. They could have turned in their signatures. I wasn't at the meeting, but my understanding was they did collect enough signatures.
Right, no. I mean, that's the point. I'm just saying not only could they have reversed the council's attempt to destroy rent control on that one occasion, but their fear of retaliation could also have been countered by a similar referendum at any point to go after any other negative actions the council took. Because if they could get together the signatures to overturn this, then why not any other, you know?
The only problem that they could have had, and this you'd have to ask someone that knows more about doing that kind of thing, is once the rents went up, and then if you passed a rent control ordinance after that, you would probably start at the higher rents. So in other words, they would have lost the lower
rents. No, but I think it freezes if you are circulating a referendum.
That's something I'm not positive about.
And I'm not either. So I can't,
one way or the other, so I can't say yes or no on that.
Right, but I think, I mean, that was my understanding was the case. So they really, they could have had their cake and eat it too if they hadn't been frightened away by some, I don't know who frightened them away, but
I
have my suspicion.
I don't know what was said, I just know, my understanding was because somebody that helped collect signatures said they had enough signatures, but the vote was, more people voted not to turn them in than voted to turn them in.
Now, is there, a analogous situation in Capitola? I mean, could the Capitola City residents vote to support their rent control, you know, support current rent control, stop the city council, and similarly go after any subsequent anti-renter moves by the city council?
Well, we had enough signatures. We went out and did it several months ago. We had enough signatures to put it on the ballot.
I know, and you had this city attorney bullshit from Barrisoni.
We had the cities that said our signatures were not valid. because each individual petition did not have a copy of the new ordinance that they meant to part of the ordinance. Well, everybody had a copy in their stack of papers. It's just...
Yeah, I understand. But you know, so they did the technical,
So we kind of got stuck in that. For the only hand, we could still do something. The only problem is, as I say, the one park has their 12-year leases, and it's pretty much done. Our park has been bought by a different owner. It's been bought by this nonprofit. And they've already excused the nonprofit from rent control, whatever rent control there is. The city, when the city passed something to help them, you know, get bonds, because no bank would finance this, they pay so much more than it's worth. When the city went through the whole bond process, right, if you looked very closely at the staff report, they also had a little thing about excusing, it's called Millennium Housing, excusing Millennium Housing from any rent control. So that's the second part. And so if you were passing rent control, you would essentially only be passing it for surf and sand now, which makes it much harder to do.
So, but you're saying that contract with the new owner or the new nonprofit couldn't be overturned itself by initiative?
I don't think so. But once again, what we'd have to do is we'd have to come up with some money and sit down with a lawyer and go over the whole process. And that's something that we can still consider doing. But as I say, I can't. That's the question I just honestly can't answer.
Is there much connection between the renters in one mobile home park and another? I mean, is there any solidarity or communication?
We were always pretty good, and we always stuck together. Maybe that's why the city took their sort of divide and conquer thing, because each park has a different solution. I don't know how Cabrillo, the one park that's already got their 12-year leases, would feel about fighting anymore. I really haven't talked with anybody there for a while.
So, I mean, I guess that's really my question, and you may not have any information on this. Are the tenants at least struggling to get together with each other to find out where they stand so maybe they can fight back? Because, to me, sitting around and waiting for city council meetings, court decisions, you know, or God, is not a helpful approach. You have to, you know, take action to deal with it. Or, you know, and if, you know, you may come to the decision you don't want to, but at least if you confer, you'll get, you know, more educated.
See, as I say, as of late, because part of it is I haven't been doing anything because I'm still laid up. But as far as I know, like, for instance, we've tried to have people there to support the people at Surf and Sand at the meetings and things like that. I haven't seen it, and I think there was one person from, like, even Cabrillo that came to the last city council meeting and spoke.
By Cabrillo, you mean the Cabrillo Mobile Home Park.
Cabrillo Mobile Home Park.
Yeah.
That's the park with 12-year leases. But, as I say, I don't know. Well, as soon as I can get up and walk again, we're going to have a meeting in this, you know, a general meeting for all the parks and decide what we're going
to
do.
Don't forget to use your phone. You do pretty good on the phone, too.
No, I've talked to people, and I did talk to, like, the vice president of the Capitola Mobile Homeowners Association the other day, because he lives at Cabrillo, and I think he'd be willing to go along and still help fight with this. But I don't know how much I haven't talked to the general residents of Cabrillo to know how they feel.
And do you know if Attorney Constantine is interested in helping with this on any kind of pro bono basis?
Probably, definitely not pro bono, but probably not. I mean, he would help with some, like he would help me with some advice, just a little bit. But if we did this, we'd probably have to go out and hire a different lawyer. Like right now, Crawford is representing the people at Surf and Sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so we probably have to do something like that. Only not him. I think, I'm not sure who we hire yet. I'd have to look into it a little more.
So I guess, yeah, I mean, I would encourage you, just speaking as an outside agitator who knows absolutely nothing more than what he reads in the Mid-County Post and hears from you and a few other people, to, you know, at least get in touch with other people to find out if there's any, backbone for doing any fighting, because you don't have a time frame to do it if you're going to start gathering signatures and that sort of thing.
Yeah, as I say, the signature thing is I'm not sure yet. We'd have to talk to another attorney. I'm hoping to have a talk with the past president of, and I thought you were going to be her on the phone when you called today about what Surf and Sand actually wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to call me back later today. So anyway, I'm going to talk with her and we'll see. Just kind of roughly, but she isn't the current president, but she's up with the board and stuff.
What can folks do who want to help? And again, I'm not talking about, although I'm not ruling out going to the city council meeting and watching the whole grim drama unfold and getting your 2 minutes or 3 minutes at the mic while they, you know, shovel the earth over your coffin or your mobile home. But what can they do independently of this that might actually help those activists who want to fight this, if there are any who do?
The only immediate pressure you can do is you can actually call City Hall. There's voicemails, or you can get the city council members' numbers and just start calling them.
Well, no, I mean, I understand that, but if the city council has made up its mind, my question...
I'm not so sure yet. As I say, there's not, Stephanie's back, who's going to probably still vote our way. I can't guarantee what she's going to do.
Okay.
I talked to one other council meeting person who was not there for the first vote. He was still indicating he was thinking of going our way.
Stephanie Harlan, you're talking about.
Stephanie Harlan, and also I talked to Sam Story, and I don't know where he's going to go for sure, but last time I talked to him, he seemed to still be indicating he wasn't ready to repeal rent control.
Now, do you have, of course, that's...
We only have to turn one person.
Now, that's... So what, do you have a number for the Capitol City Council we can give out on the air here?
I don't have the individual phone numbers, although actually... City Hall is 475-7300.
475-7300 for those who want to support.
And that just gets you to City Hall.
But you can then learn how to get to any of the council members.
And they'll tell you how to get to the council. That way, my book with the numbers is nowhere close.
Again, while I applaud calling City Hall, and I have hopes that you get a third council member, the question to me is if you don't, and in a way, even if you think you might, it might be good to do some organizing independently of that, so the other three city council members would be aware that there's an active constituency that does not want them to vote that way and will take action if they do. So it might, give them further pause. Is there any kind of number that people can call?
That's the thing. I don't honestly know what people have a stomach to do anymore. Because, Surf and Sand has spent a small fortune trying, on their stuff. They're more than $100,000 out on legal fees already.
You're talking about Surf and Sand?
Surf and Sand all by themselves.
Surf and Sand residents.
Yeah, residents are more than $100,000.
Are there any people who want to put themselves forward as possible organizers or people to call and support, is what I'm saying?
I don't know of anybody right now. I think Cabrillo's, they've decided they're content with what they have. I don't know. The few people I've talked to here in our park, I was really surprised. There were people here that were willing to just go along with the nonprofit buying the park. And so I don't know how, as I say, I don't honestly know how much stomach there is around the city to fight anymore.
Well, if you
find that, I have to find out.
Sure. If you find anybody, whether there's majority sentiment or minority sentiment, anybody who actually has an interest in spearheading this issue, give me a call. And again, for those who want to get in touch with me and who are listening on the air, the number is off air. It's 423-4833, 423-4833. And, of course, the number in the studio, if you want to call in and respond to this conversation I'm having with Rick here, is 427-3772. 427-3772. This is taped, but I will be in the studio playing the tape, and I'll take your calls after the interview is over. Rick Ellison, is there anything else you want to say about this or any other thoughts you have? I guess the Capitola City Council meeting is coming up, on Thursday?
September 8th.
On Thursday evening at 7 o'clock?
Thursday, September 8th. The meeting starts at 7 o'clock. I assume it's still going to be a public hearing, so I don't know when they're going to get to it. In the 7:30 quarter date range, probably.
Uh-huh. Well, I appreciate that, and if you learn anything more, please give me a call, and I will pass on the word.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Rick Halterman, who is... an activist at one of the mobile home parks in Capitola, one that's already been sold and essentially abandoned the city protections of rent control. I think there's some more limited protections written into some of the leases, but again, the leases are limited, as I understand it, although I'm not sure about the exact limits on his lease, but typically it runs for a briefer, not for a 34-year period as it did in Santa Cruz with the De Anza. And perhaps the reason it was so long for De Anza people is they're at an average age, as you said, of 73. So 34-year lease probably won't go longer than 10 years for most of the folks. Anyway, the issue is coming up at the Capitola City Council in a week, about the same time as this show will be airing next week. And you can call them between now and then if you want to support the Capitola Mobile Home Park people at 475-7300, 475-7300. You can call them tonight. They won't be in, but you can leave a message by, calling 475-7300, then pressing 1 for extension 1, and then getting into the extension of a council member, and then just leaving a message. You want to make sure that that council member votes against ending rent control for the surf and sand, and rent control for the other mobile home parks coming up that we need to people to be able to be housed at this time, that actually it's more expensive for them not to be housed by the community. They start using emergency services, creating all kinds of difficult problems, not to mention, of course, the obvious human cost. You are tuned to freakradio.org, the stream. If you are listening on September 1st, this is a call-in show. 427-3772. Are you having trouble paying your rent? Would you like to see rent control in Santa Cruz or thereabouts? We're, of course, talking about rent control only in mobile home parks, but what we really need, of course, is a much broader entitlement, that rent should be at least a reasonable percentage of the cost of living and the wage people make. Give us a call and tell me what you think, 427-3772. And in the meantime, let's hear another one from Rovix from Payday at Coal Creek.
Today is mourning the death of Mother Jones. Grief and sorrow hover around the miner's home. That grand old champion of labor has gone to a better land. But the hard-working miners miss her guiding hand. Through the hills and over the valleys, in every mine and town, Mother Jones was ready to help them. She never let them down. In front with the striking miners, she always could be found. She fought for right and justice. She made a noble stand. With a spirit strong and fearless, she hated that which was wrong, and she never gave up fighting until her breath was gone. May the workers all get together and carry out her plan and bring back better conditions for every laboring woman and man.
And that was an anonymous tune, which David Rovix picked up on, about, of course, the death of Mother Jones. Mother Jones, according to the linear notes here, fought tirelessly for workers' rights in the coal mines and the textile mills, and wasn't her long life as beloved by the Knights of Labor in the 1870s as she was by the industrial workers of the world in the early 20th century, 40 years later, which she helped found in 1906. Them were the days for labor. And we do have a caller. Let's see who this could be. I bet I know who this is. How are you doing? Caller? Hello? Hello? Caller, turn down your radio or something. Can you hear me? Hang on a second here. Hello? For some reason, we're having a little problem You may want to call in on the other line, 469-3119. Why don't you try that? Yep. Yeah, give it a try. And my apologies, folks. Apparently, although it looks like I may have turned up the wrong dial, but let's try the other line, see if I can get the right dial this time. Hi there. I hope you can hear me and I can hear you.
Is it working?
I can hear you.
Good enough.
Hey there. How you doing there, Bob?
Good. I go back with rent control, Robert, as you know. I mean, I think in a town like Santa Cruz, it makes a great deal of sense. And, in fact, it's modest. It's got to do with respect for the fact that people do need to live somewhere, and not everybody's going to be able to afford an $800,000 fixer-upper, which is about the reality in Santa Cruz now. It's got to do with mutual respect. I think it's unfortunate what's going down with the so-called mobile home parks. And by the way, they're not really mobile homes. If you go to any of these parks now, anything built after maybe even 1970, they're pretty well fixed to the spot.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with it. If you can't afford the rent, you got to walk away.
Yeah, they're even to call them coaches, the newer ones are actually made out of wood. You know, in some cases, they're cemented into the ground and have foundations. Certainly here at De Anza, I think even at Clearview, the majority would be in that direction.
Yours is not mobile. You couldn't move it if you wanted to.
It would, with great difficulty. And then where to?
Right.
But it's pretty well fixed, as are the great majority of the pads here. And yes, as your guest was saying, the reality is it's an affordable option, okay? In regards to having some sort of a pleasant dwelling, accepting the fact that it's not a fully functioning house, but it's also not a condo, right? So there's a trade-off, but I find it quite agreeable. If you really want to talk to two people out here at De Anza that are very knowledgeable, Herb Rossman and Sterling Frost, and I'm sure they'd be in the phone book. They're both very nice people, and they both would go back way, way before the rent control crisis came down in 03. All right? They'd have some good feedback for you. I really didn't have that much interest in it. I signed the petition. In fact, somewhat begrudgingly, I felt that it wasn't going to go anywhere. Now, they may or may not have had enough raw signatures. I really don't know, Robert.
I was told they did.
Yeah, they may have. They may or may not have. All right. But as the decision went down, I remember going to one of the meetings. And, yes, the fact of the matter is you got a bunch of 70-year-olds, you know, average age, who are paranoid. Legions of lawyers come down, swoop down, and say, sign here or you're gone, you know. Kind of paranoid.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I understand.
I will speak very highly of Ed Porter. He was the one vote, like Stephanie Harlan. I think it was, 4-1 in Capitola?
Or 3-1.
Yeah, 3-1, whatever it was. It was 6-1 here in Santa Cruz. And Porter's position was, this is the word. This is our word that we're reneging. He was really the only one that would stand up for integrity, as I see it. However, you know, rent control has gone in and out of fashion around here. The so-called establishment progressives wanted to go for a living wage. They felt that living wage was the thing to do, was the way to go, was the phrase that it was laid on me, and they failed.
Well, actually, they went for a living wage for city employees, and they succeeded. What they failed was raising the minimum wage, and these weren't That wasn't the city. That was, I guess, independent labor groups, and they failed because city council opposed the raising of the minimum wage, even though it was only a small raise. And it was
There was a ballot measure.
Sometime
last decade, right?
I believe for the minimum wage, not for the living wage.
All right.
I could be wrong about that.
I think it was a minimum wage, Robert, for the city of Santa Cruz, right?
Right. Restaurant owners were up in arms and so forth.
Yes. The reason, as far as I understand it, the whole province of Ontario still has rent control. You know, the entire province. It's got its problems, but it accepts the fact that one of the basic elements of living, some kind of of a fairly decent, clean life. I don't mean expensive necessarily, but just decent, is housing. It's a component. If we allow ourselves to deny that housing is a component, well, then sure, you can charge whatever you want, right? Whatever the market will bear. But I think what rent control says is that, look, as long as you're there, the rent's not going to get jacked up through the roof. Where I would find fault with what's gone down in Capitola is that, you know, when you tell somebody 12 years and then that's not as long as most people are going to live. Do you follow me?
Yeah, although I think in Capitola, I'm not sure what the average age. I think the average age at De Anza was much higher. It was 73, as I was. That's what my guess.
There may be some
Rick
survivors
suggested.
Out here in 2037. I would like to think that I'm going to be among those, but I don't know.
You never can tell.
But you know, 12 years in a park without.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Adult. Yes, because then you have no stability for your.
You can't pass it on to anybody to a child or to an offspring or a friend. It all reverts to the interests of the developer or the owner. I mean, it's a rigged game.
Well,
as
rent
I see
control
it.
Has its problems even in manufactured home parks. Marty Brick is another person. Marty Brick, I think, is a former mayor of Los Gatos who lives here in De Anza. She's very active with the issue. Mardi Brick. Herb Rossman and Sterling Frost. I mean, I would suggest those three. Dave Allenbach, I think, is the current HOA pres.
You know,
some people are much more knowledgeable than I am.
I can do that, although you probably, since you do live in De Anza, you're probably aware of whether many people had to walk away from their homes because
Some did. You see, what you lose when Jane and I bought in here in 02, you buy the squad, right? And then you have the cost of the house. So we bought a rather, we could have lived in the trailer that was here. You know, truly, it was a metal mobile home. But instead, it was torn down, sold, and we have what we have that was manufactured. That's pretty typical during that whole phase. So that's rent control, in a sense, inflates the cost, the move-in cost. But your rent then is stabilized.
Or was, you thought.
Well, ours is stabilized till 2037.
Because of the lease, the 34-year
right.
lease is signed.
But as was pointed out by your guests, it's non-transferable.
Right. So you can't sell it or move.
We're both comfortable enough with it, right, where it's not, like, to me, a, you know, browbeating, devastating reality. I don't know. I can see where people would feel bad. Especially if you're figuring on that, and you want.
Why did the people leave who did leave? What
they
motivated
them? They
couldn't sell it. Did they want it?
It's several things. Now we're talking whether they. Barack Obama will admit this when he gives his speech, but we're in the midst of the greatest economic catastrophe of our lifetimes. Okay, that's one factor.
But before that happened, I mean, this happened at De Anza in 2003 or so.
The other factor is that you do not have the ability to offer someone who's buying stable rent. The rent in our space would probably triple, okay?
Which you possibly couldn't afford.
So it becomes a very, very different game.
Well, how many people would you say have walked away from their homes in De Anza
afford it? Again, I'm not the one to talk about it. I think some have. I understand some have. But if you talk to any of those folks...
I'll try and do that.
Marty Brick is really one of the ones that's very, very... she's emerged very strong on this issue. Very knowledgeable, very political. Well, but Rossman, Sterling Frost...
If they're friends of yours, give them a call and tell them that I may be giving them a call and see if... Of course, that may doom both of us, but...
no, I think, you know, Marty Brick would be... If I was going to say one person, Marty Brick. She hasn't been here that long, but she's very knowledgeable about the issue. In fact, she's written certain little pieces for the Sentinel.
Well, Bob, are you going to... do you think you're going to give a call to the Capitola City Council and encourage them to support the renters?
I would encourage them to look at... politics being more than providing property owners with their rights. That non-property owners have rights. And we have a great deal of difficulty with this issue.
And for those who agree with you, the phone number is 475-7300. I'm going to roll on you, Bob.
All the best, Robert. Hang tight.
All right, man. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, and indeed, the other number does work. I've just seem to be having a little problem with my dials. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number here, and I can take calls. And while I'm waiting for your many calls, let's have another tune from David Robix.
More shadow work in the factory, greasy up my clothes. The more shadow work in the factory, splinters in my toes. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away. The more shadow hear the bosses say, boys, you better dog. No more shall I hear the bosses say, spinners better clean off. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away. More shall I hear the drummer wheels rolling over my head. When factories are hard at work, I'll be in my bed. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away. No more shall I wear the old black dress, greasy all around. No more shall I wear the old black bonnet with holes all in the crown. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away. Shall I see the super come all dressed up so proud? For I know I'll marry a country boy when the year is out. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away. Pity me, my darling, pity me, I say. Pity me, my darling, and carry me away.
That was another one by Rovix called The Lowell Factory Girl. Young women in the textile mills of Massachusetts died at an average age of 26. Wow. Constantly inhaling cotton dust, working long hours in unventilated rooms lit by oil lamps. Before their struggles for safer working conditions and better pay bore fruit, often a mill worker's best hope at a decent life was to marry a farmer if she could find one who hadn't lost his land and ended up in a factory as a factory hand himself. All from Payday at Coal Creek. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org. Got an email from beggarbacker Becky Johnson, which related to what we were talking about a moment ago, the minimum wage. Kind of came up as a side issue. She sent me an email, which I'm trying to access on this computer. A little difficult here because it tends to go all kinds of different ways, but hopefully I'll be able to get there. She pointed out there was an initiative, Measure G, back in November. Shall the city adopt an ordinance requiring employers in the city of Santa Cruz to pay a minimum wage of $9.25 an hour rather than the $6.75 per hour minimum wage required by state law, which failed? Yes, 8,693. No, 13,571. I remember supporting that ordinance and watching it go down as all the businesses in town, except for a few, supporting or opposing that that law. So I have a couple things I'm going to be discussing. At 7:30, Mike Rhodes of Fresno will be calling in to talk about police accountability there, as well as latest adventures of homeless people scampering and struggling to survive. Earlier today, and I guess a couple days ago, I received an email from Jen Laskin, who's an activist, teacher, Brown Beret, and also ACLU board member. The last is her least distinguished profession, as far as I'm concerned. ACLU has been notoriously bad in Santa Cruz and continues to be, although there is a meeting coming up where supposedly they're going to consider the downtown ordinances and privacy issues around smart meters and the Norse versus City of Santa Cruz mock Nazi spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to make sure the city council can kick anybody out they want lawsuit. So maybe the ACLU is turning a new leaf, turning over a new leaf. No, I don't really think so. But there's some who wanted to, and my hat's off to them. Anyway, Jen sent me this email, city to clear out homeless camps from the Watsonville Register Pajaronian, which I passed on, and folks can get such similar emails if they want by getting on the Huff email list. To do that, you have to either give me a call at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 4833, or you can email me at rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, Norse, like a Norseman, 3, number 3, at hotmail.com, and I'll put you on. But the story is city to clear out homeless camps. And it was dated Monday, August 29th, in the Watsonville Register Pajaroni. I'm going to read it. 3 days after a small brush fire set by a homeless woman scorched several hundred square feet of dry grass along the Pajaro River levee, several Watsonville police officers spent Monday morning walking, visiting homeless encampments there, preparing residents for eviction sometime this week. I'm having a little problem with this, reading this. Hang on a second here. Let's see if I can. There we go. let's see here. The 24-hour notice is a courtesy by the officers to the people who call the levee home. It gives them a chance to remove their belongings and as much of their meager dwellings as they can carry. Of course, it doesn't say to where, of course. We let them know that we don't want to catch them by surprise or trash their stuff, said Watsonville police officer Chris Green. This is kind of like what Take Back Santa Cruz does. They come rolling through. They say they're going to trash everything, but we're doing this because we don't want to trash your stuff. We want you to trash your stuff or carry it off somewhere where perhaps you can be ticketed for it or otherwise harassed. Sorry to sound so cynical, but that seems to be the general situation in Santa Cruz for many people. Now we're talking Watsonville. Let's see what's going on there. Now, with pressure from the California State Water Resources Control Board to reduce the amount of human waste that washes into the river, and from hikers who say the presence of dozens of people camping along the river now makes them feel unsafe, the city plans to conduct programs once a month, said Watsonville water quality specialist Robert Ketley. So, in other words, in order to pander to the fears of hikers, and rather than put in toilet facilities, they're going to destroy people's homes. Smart move, Watsonville water quality specialists. The problem, said Ketley, the water quality specialist, is that human waste that accumulates near the camps finds its way into the river. Kelly said that the high pathogen levels in samples taken from the river by state officials have prompted representatives from the SWRCB, that's the State Water Control Quality Specialist Board, or whatever, to declare the river impaired. I believe the camps are the most likely source, Ketley said. On Monday, a small group of men was playing soccer on a makeshift field, kicking the ball through a goal fashioned from sticks. nearby. Another man cooked on a small kitchen, while another stood in the doorway of his hut, a ramshackle collection of tarps and wooden pallets. Other huts were tucked along the slope bank of the river, their tarp-covered roofs obscured by the dense foliage. Dozens of bicycles lay scattered around the camp, and clothes blew lazily on a clothesline. "It's a small community," said Watsonville Police Department Lieutenant Ed Gluhan. One of the residents, Candy Williams, said she was surprised when Watsonville Police Officer Zane Otta told her she would have to move, but seemed resigned to her fate. "I guess that's how it is," she said. "It's hard being homeless." Williams, who has been living on the levee for 5 months, said she once had a job with a school district in Castroville, but got injured and began to suffer from depression. She said she was unsure where she would go next, but pointing west up the river said it would be that-a-way. "Way, way that-a-way," she said, laughing. Ketley said the expanded enforcement will help prevent the campers from moving right back in. And that's the story in the Watsonville Register Pajaronian of 2 days ago, city to clear out homeless camps. Actually, 3 days ago. In response, Jen Laskin has written the following letter to the Watsonville mayor and encourages others to do the same. "Hi, Councilmember Hurst and Mayor Dodge. I am writing to express my concerns over the police-led evacuation of the homeless community which was destroyed during the past few days. We, a coalition including the Brown Berets, have been working with these folks since January when we participated in the homeless census. It was discovered that over 200 people were living at the levee, over 350, many more in reality, live in Watsonville, spread out amongst the few shelters and the streets. These people have nowhere to go. They are workers. They have lost their previous homes and jobs. Sal Lua, a lead mechanic at the bike shack, did a school report at AVCI and discovered that one woman is living there because she had spent all of her money bringing her deceased son to Mexico to bury him. Upon her return, she needed to get her savings back together, so she was living at the levee. Other communities have city-sanctioned tent cities, not many, though, or areas where the people in this situation can go to live. Fresno is a good example. Again, many of these people are workers. They live there because there is no affordable housing. What do you suggest we, the concerned voters and community members, do to support a beneficial solution to the problem? I personally am horrified that the Watsonville PD threw away so many personal belongings of people, that they were warned of the eviction with no access to services or references of where to go, no assistance to help gather, pack, and move their things. I also read and witnessed many bikes. Are those bikes going to be thrown away? Many of these people are clients of the bike shack. We at least could have saved the bikes for the folks and stored them while all their other things were being thrown in a dumpster. The city has land. It is vacant. Is there a solution that the city council and the Watsonville PD have for these people? Please advise. I am the current co-chair of the ACLU, and while we so far have found little legal ground for the homeless people to fight you, the city, and the WPD on, we are going to bring this to the attention of our members and to the public. I will continue to research legal precedents. The manner in which this evacuation was done is heartless, especially in a community that is based on the work of these most vulnerable workers. I find it ironic the excuse for the human rights violation is that the water is being polluted with human waste, while the government allows Big Ag to pollute our water constantly with pesticide runoff and extensive use of methyl bromide, the most in the state. I believe the money the WPD will spend on the monthly patrols and future evacuations could be better spent on creating a piece of land or public space for the people to live and to rent a few porta-potties. That would be a decent, acceptable, immediate, short-term solution. You could also help bring all the agencies and supportive services together to come up with a longer-term solution. Thank you for your time. Please feel free to contact me with any questions. Jen Laskin. And then her phone number is there. In fact, I think I'm going to give Jen a call and see if we can get some thoughts from her on this issue, if she's available, which she may or may not be, and we'll see if she is. I should say we are kind of catching her by surprise, so we'll see if this is actually going to work.
We're sorry. A long-distance company at...
And there's the problem. That's a number that's slightly out of the area. And poor Free Radio Santa Cruz is too impoverished to have a long-distance line. But if anybody knows Jen and wants to give her a call at 238-5290, 238-5290, I encourage him to do so and ask her to call the show so we can talk a bit more. Maybe we should get someone to do that shortly. In the meantime, let's hear another one from Aerovix while I get my shit together.
Done nobody harm that I can see. Still on me they put a ban. They would throw me in the can. They go wild, simply wild over me. They accuse me of rascality. I don't know why they're always picking on me. I'm as gentle as a lamb, yet they take me for a ram. They go wild, simply wild over me. Where everyone could see. Well, he was breathing rather hard when he saw my union card. He went wild, simply wild over me. And that judge, he went wild over me. I could plainly see that we would never agree. So I let man obey what his conscience had to say. He went wild, simply wild over me. And the jailer, he went wild over me. And he locked me up and threw away the key. Well, it seems to be the rage, so they throw me in a cage. They go wild, simply wild over me. Referring to the bed bug and flea. They disturb my slumber deep and I murmur in my sleep. They go wild, simply wild over me. Even God, he went wild over me. This I found out when I knelt upon my knee. Did he hear my humble yell? No, he told me go to hell. He went wild, simply wild over me. Will the roses grow wild over me? When I'm gone to the land that is to be, when my soul and body part in the stillness of my heart, will the roses grow wild? Will the roses grow wild? Will the roses grow wild over me?
And that was the... That was called the popular Wobbly T-Bone Slim song, outlining some of the trials of making one's living hopping freight trains as an organizer for the IWW before the days of the frequent flyer miles. However, we have a frequent caller who has just gotten apparently not that unusual. He's had a problem at the Paul Lee Loft. Hi there, caller.
Hi, David Silver here, Uncle Robert. Yes, I've been evicted from the Paul Lee Loft for obeying the rules and... being busy and trying to find a home. It's just actually for the last 3 days I've been harassed and assaulted for obeying the rules and doing the volunteer work as you're supposed to. But last night I got called to do... We're doing, I'm doing the triple bureaucracy because I'm switching from one funding to another and a lot of appointments. And then I got called back to the lab in order to get my medicine tomorrow. Today, last night, I got called back.
Now, you're a person with AIDS.
I was called in. I was going to be half an hour late, and they would let me come back. And then so I called, and they called and explained the situation. Thought everything's all right, but when we got there, I was totally evicted. And we have very serious medical conditions.
Slow down, David.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just in the dark.
David, slow down and say that one more time, a little more slowly.
Okay. I've been evicted because I was called back to the lab to get the lab work done, and... I was going to be about half an hour late, so they wouldn't let me back in last night. They told me all I had to do was call. So I called this morning, went about, putting in applications for temporary housing and all those things that I do, just busy all day. When we got there, we were told that we were evicted because we went there last night. And I said, well, yeah, we called and explained, and they told us not to come in because we'd be half an hour late. But, we had to do it because when we were homeless, the police chased us around and broke up the lids of the bottles. So I ruined a lot of medication I had to have replaced. It was life-threatening. Same with Billy's medication, life-threatening if you don't take them.
Let me ask you a question about this, David. Now, when you said you called in to, and you said you were going to be a half an hour late, what time was it when you called in?
Actually, I at 5:30, I thought I could still make it back. So I guess it was about a quarter after six because the lab technician had left. They told us we got back there by 5:30, they would do it. And we waited, and when I saw it would possibly be late, then the lab technician said, "Are you going to take us?" I knew, well, with the bus, it's still getting there by 7:30, which, you know, I thought would be all right, but it wasn't. And then I called and explained the situation to the directors. But, you know, there's so many bosses and semi-bosses and bullies and thugs and volunteers and bullies and thugs. The last 3 days, we've been really driven out of there, Robert. So they found out I was HIV positive, and I refused to move in the kitchen for that reason because I have personal integrity. They just really came down on me, and it hasn't stopped. And Billy's diabetes is like too much for them to handle. And
so let me understand this
because we're banging the rules. Because we're
David,
banging the rules.
David, wait, slow down. Let me see because you're talking very quickly. But let me see if I understand clearly what you're saying. You're saying that when several days ago they found out you are HIV positive, a person with HIV. That the attitude towards you changed inside the shelter.
Started being pushed around, yes.
From the and clients assaulted, or from the people running it, or both? Or?
Both, yeah.
And go ahead.
Pretty much a nightmare for 2 days. You know, so we're getting pretty frustrated anyway. But still, we needed a place to be out of the cold, and we're going to put up with it. But we called back to the lab, and I explained it to them, and I thought it was all right, but. You know, I guess orders came down, they said, from the top.
So initially they told you it was okay even though you were going to be come back around 7:30 or 8, because after all, you are an adult. I mean, it's not like you're...
7:30, we said we'd be back.
I mean, you're not waking anybody up at 7:30 in the evening when you come in. So it seems kind of peculiar they wouldn't allow that. So but first they told you they would allow it, then when you attempted to go there, you weren't allowed in, or what happened there?
No, well, one time when I had to go get some medicine for Billy, they gave me a half hour. This time we were both together because we were at the same clinic, and it was going to take too long to get back, but I had to have that blood work, also wouldn't have my medicine. It was a life-threatening situation. I just one of those kind of things. I couldn't help it. The bureaucracy was, like, you know, a little bit slack, and I was being expected to be cut a little bit slack because of it. But actually, I found out, you know, just as I was signing in, we're out of the program. I'm surprised because, you know, the junkies...
So this is as you... This is
you're drunk or drunk.
Hang on, David.
Okay,
whoa.
Come back in.
David, wait. So yeah. As you... I'm trying to get the facts because you are speaking at about two or three times the normal speed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to
criticize you, but let me... I'm slowing it down so we can understand it. So
sure.
You were... When you, that evening, and this was last night that this happened,
you
came back, and first they told you to come in, then when you showed up, they wouldn't let you in?
No. They told me they wouldn't let me in. So we stayed out in the cold last night. At 10 o'clock, I got my veterans money in the thing, and we got a motel, but all we did was sleep. We weren't outside partying or nothing. We got up early in the morning, we went and put applications in all the places. We had left a message with the person they told us to, Angie. And when we talked to Angie finally, she said, "No, you're supposed to live with Mr. Karen Liu." We left Mr. Karen Liu, and she never got back to us. And so I thought it was a pretty plausible, you know, reasoning for us, you know, not going in. And we respected the rules and didn't barge in on them and force us our ways in. So we're the only ones that respected the rules.
So you tried not you respected their silly rules about not coming back after 5:30, and because you respected their rules, and then called the wrong person who failed to give you a call back, apparently.
No. I called the wrong person first, but I finally got the right person. I left her several messages. I called the wrong person first thing in the morning. But all day long, I called the right person.
So
she didn't call me back.
And you didn't get a call back. And when you went back...
No, I didn't know about it, so I showed up. And, you know, we're busy putting an application.
And we're talking about two disabled people. One is a person yourself with AIDS. Another is a younger person with diabetes.
Brittle diabetic. We have a very radical situation here. A life-threatening situation. You know, I have to watch the post every day.
So, wow. I'm sorry to hear it, David.
Tomorrow, you know, I'll start spending money on motels, and I hope A5 is going to... If we can find cheap motels, we need advice on where to go to the cheap motels.
In the summer? I doubt it, but yeah.
I know. A5 can pay for the cheap motels, the cheap temporary housing, but the veterans are going to pay for the regular housing. But that'll be a whale. Well, so the future looks bright, but tonight looks very, very dark.
Well, it sounds like, however, you're making some important, you're presenting some information to us which impacts not only you.
I got a receipt, by the way. I got a receipt.
So in other words, this is another issue. But before we turn to that issue, do you know if this, what's happened to you, has happened to anybody else with any regularity?
I don't know if it's happened with regularity, and I don't know what their side of the story has been. I always heard, the gossipy, slandery, the bullies version. I haven't heard their side of the story.
I understand. Their side of the story hasn't been clear.
The people that live there permanently and the bullies are the ones that, really run the show more than even the...
Who are you specifically referring to?
Well, I don't know all their names, but I know what jobs they claim to hold down permanent, which is supposed to be open for us to do volunteer work to pay for, to make up for our lost time there, but I schedule it.
By the bullies, do you mean the employees who run the homeless service center?
Yeah, they push you around and they won't let you do the volunteer hours that you're required to do if you're trying to get home or if you're just laying around lounging and not trying and you're drugging or drinking, that's easy for you to fit in there, but if you're trying to get home, you're thrown out.
So you see a discriminatory, a differential process in how different sorts of people are treated, is what you're saying.
The circumstances are not, those people are trying to get out of homelessness are discriminated against.
Interesting. What about this other issue? You said you went to get a receipt for the waiting list for so that you could get into the Pauley Loft. Did you get on the waiting list again to get readmitted to the Pauley Loft?
Here's the thing. I tried to get that, and they said, no, I can't give you no because you can't apply for it for 30 days. I said, have I had a hearing? Was there a bad behavior? What are you talking about? He said, no, you can't get on can't apply for 30 days. So I said, well, then give me a note to that effect. I want a receipt, at least I asked.
And they gave you a note that said that?
Yeah.
So do we know, of course, the real question, that's important to know, but it sounds like you're...
Well, I'm reading a note now. Actually, it says the date, and it says exited, and it says you must wait 30 days before you reapply. And it says the law. That's all they said. That's not what it has to provide.
Right. So another, and is it signed by anybody, or...?
He signed it. Well, Patrick signed it. He signed it, the law.
Okay, so
I
now,
name.
Now of course, what we were trying to, what we've been trying to find out for quite a while is whether ordinary people who come and are put on the waiting list, since almost everybody, no one can get into these Pauley Loft directly, they go into a waiting list, get a receipt that says, I'm on the waiting list, and that's something we have yet to find out, and that apparently you won't be able to find out for 30 more days if you're still alive at the end of 30 days.
My Veterans Service Officer is raised, holy hell, and so is my nurse. These people are going to wake up and start operating right. This is awful. This is horrible the way they're doing things. It's awful.
Well, David,
they're discouraging people being housed.
Yeah, I hope to get a full report from you and I hope you're successful in raising some hell, assuming your allegations are accurate. And anything else you want to say before I roll? I got something coming up here.
Yeah, we've been clean, honest, and trying to play by the rules, and that's why we were punished.
You got rigged rules, buddy. Keep that in mind.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Not to mention rigged rulers. You're tuned to the stream of freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We are live if you are listening to us on September 1st, 2011. The call-in number is 427-3772. And I don't know if Jen Laskin has been trying to call in because that number she was trying to call in on was the one I was talking to David Silva on. And Jen, of course, is the activist who's written to the Watsonville mayor denouncing the policies of the Watsonville PD toward the Watsonville homeless. And I'm glad to hear it. This actually may be an indication that we have a couple of people on the city's, the local ACLU board who may start raising the roof. And I'm going to give Jen a call when I get to a phone that I can actually use, maybe later tonight, and talk to her about this. In the meantime, it's time for another one of them old folksy tunes from David Rovix.
Thank you.
I lay dreaming of pleasant days gone by. Me mind being bent on rambling to Ireland I did fly. I stepped on board a vision, I followed it with a will, and I shortly came to anchor at the cross of Spencer Hill. Delighted by the novelty, enchanted by the sea, where in my early boyhood often I had been, I thought I heard a murmur, I think I hear it still. It's the little stream of water that flows down Spencer Hill to amuse a passing fancy. I lay down on the ground, and all my school companions, they quickly gathered round. As we were home returning, we danced with bright goodwill to Martin Moylan's music at the cross on Spencer Hill. They might say the old ones were all dead and gone, the young ones worn and gray. I spoke with the tailor quickly, he's bold as ever still. Sure, he used to make my breeches when I lived on Spencer Hill. I paid a flying visit to my first and only love. She's bright as any lily and gentle as a dove. She threw her arms around me saying, Johnny, I love you still. Oh, she's Mac, the ranger's daughter and the pride of Spencer Hill. Oh, I dreamt I stooped and kissed her, as in the days of yore. She said, Johnny, you're only joking, as many's the time before. The rooster crowed in the morning, he crowed both loud and shrill, and I awoke in California. Many miles from Spencer Hill.
And that was quite a number. What was that number? That was Spencer Hill. I'm not sure if this is a song apparently anonymously composed, originated in Ireland or in America. It's a classic, heart-wrenching song of lost love and immigration, one of so many great songs to come out of the depopulation of Ireland through starvation and the American wakes or immigration. Or so writes David Rovix in his album Payday at Coral Creek. Name of that song again, Spencer Hill. Well, coming up shortly, we have Mike Rhodes, and he's going to be talking about the situation in Fresno, which is a city which has successfully defended itself, or at least some of the homeless folks got lawyers to defend themselves from the property destruction practices. I don't know actually how successful they are these days, because I believe that that lawsuit, which won $2.3 million back in 2006 or 2007, has kind of, shall we say, seen its day. It needs to be, shall we say, revitalized. And we'll see if Mike is actually able to do that, or if the legal forces have all dispersed and, I don't know, been devastated by the Depression themselves. We'll see what he says about that. There's an interesting article on the subject on indiebay.org/Central Valley. That's indiebay.org/Central Valley, which is the Central Valley version or section of the indie media, which is one of my favorite places to go to post stuff, and I recommend you check it out. I'm going there now in anticipation of his call, which should be coming momentarily. Mike Rose is a longtime activist in Fresno, a prolific writer. He writes for a number of different on a number of different issues, and I'm looking over the Central Valley website. He's got an article there, "Without Police Accountability, There Is No Justice." And I guess that's one of the things he's going to talk about, which is police violence in Fresno. And he should probably team up with me talking about and writing about police violence in Santa Cruz. I've written and talked about the case of Curtis Chad Winston, Officer Winston's apparent victim, according to three separate reliable witnesses, beaten with a club while he stood there, essentially not resisting Officer Winston's rage. Winston seems to have a relatively loose temper in these situations, or at least in this one he did. This was way back in May 26th or 27th, thereabouts. We're going to hear, though, from Mike Rhodes what's going on in Fresno, which more has to do with even more serious violence, but I'm, of course, always try to link it to local stuff. There's an interesting new article that I recommended Alex Derossi post, and I think he did, called "Two Men Sighted Downtown on Sunday, One for His Dog, One for a Question Mark," and the trolls are hard at work trying to discredit the account or question the account. But it's an interesting story. Go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website to look at it in case I don't have time to talk about it. Sounds like an incoming call from, Mike Rhodes, I would imagine. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Mike Rhodes at Fresno.
Hey, Mike, thanks for delaying and calling back. So I didn't get a chance to read your article, but I did mention it, and I know you have a couple of issues to talk about. One of them has to do with police accountability, and I guess Victor Gonzalez's the dog attack, the police dog attack on him?
Well, there's been so many incidences that have happened here lately. Victor is certainly one of them. I've talked to his family and got police reports on it through the California Public Records Act request. And it's an interesting case because it's a very specific example of what's happening here in Fresno with the police, because they have absolutely no restraints on them. If you can imagine a situation where you have the police having a free rein on a community and the violence is escalating all the time.
It's not hard to imagine, actually. Go ahead.
you may have a similar situation.
Well, we have a smaller community, and perhaps in a certain sense it's a little less overtly redneck, but we have the same situation. Sergeant Christian Lamas can break Donna Dice's arm and nothing is done. Officer Connor Carey can shoot Happy John Dine dead and there's no accountability, even though it's, every non-police witness said that Dine had no weapon in his hand and it was a bad shooting, if you will, if you want to be charitable. We have our own, that's an older case from back to 1997, But, you know, the case with Curtis Chad, where Winston assaulted him repeatedly, according to witnesses in front of New Leaf Market back in late May, nothing is done about that. But tell us more about Fresno and what you've learned and how you use the Public Records Act. That sounds interesting.
Well, this kind of started most recently with a case around Angelo Fernandez, who was shot in the back by the Fresno police. That was about 2, maybe 3 months ago now. And they said that they were looking for him for being out of compliance with parole. And they boxed his car in a parking lot. He got out and ran across the parking lot heading towards a open field. And they opened fire on him and shot him in the back. They said that they thought that what he was going to do is go into a store somewhere and take hostages. So it's sort of this, you know, well, a crime might happen sometime in the future, so it's okay to shoot an unarmed man in the back.
And how long ago was this?
Well, 2 or 3 months ago.
And, of course, immediately the population rose up. They burned the police station. The police chief resigned. And a whole new regime was instituted.
Well, you know, hey, actually, there's actually been some kind of interesting things happening along those lines. I mean,
I was kidding, of course. Wishful thinking.
Not to be flippant about this, but there has been some rather militant action here in Fresno taking aim at the police. And the most recent thing was that a Molotov cocktail was thrown on a police car in southwest Fresno, burned it, incinerated it, and it was in the lot of the Southwest Police Department unit. They have an office over there, and so there was another car that was involved, which was an officer's personal vehicle and the police car. Before that, there's been bricks being thrown through the Fresno Police Officers Association. There's been paint thrown on a Fresno Police Memorial. But the attacks seem to be escalating, and it has certainly gotten the attention of the police.
Well, I'm sure you and other good citizens are conducting massive investigations to bring these paint criminals to justice.
I'd actually like to talk to them and get their take on what's going on and publish a story about that, because, you know, we're not really hearing much about what's going on from mainstream media. They're not covering this other than it's vandalism and, you know, it's this crime against the police. But I'm absolutely sure that there's a political motivation behind the insurrection, if you will, against the police department. And a lot of it comes from this increase of violence that's taking place in Fresno, and there being absolutely no buddy looking at what the police is doing. There's no independent investigations. There's no police review board, independent police auditor. The DA doesn't look into it. The California Attorney General is not interested in it. And yet there's these shootings that take place, like I was telling you with Angelo Fernandez, that are clearly wrong. Nobody should be shot in the back. An unarmed person shot in the back for a crime that the police get on the television and say might be committed in the future. That's just, you know, this is the beginning, if not the middle, of a movement towards a police state.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Oscar Grant, as you know, was shot, executed in the back of the neck by Johannes Merzely and his friends in the BART station. And then, of course, we had the first ever trial and mini conviction of a police officer in decades for, I think it was, what, manslaughter or something? And he was released almost in an unheard-of short amount of time after he was jailed. But, you know, that happened because the only reason that trial actually happened because there was so much publicity around it, because so much independent camera work or, I don't know, iPhone or, you know, just cell phone picture work came out of that. It, you know, we're finding there's actually activists in Santa Cruz who are working on giving away kind of old cell phones to homeless people so they can take photos of the police engaging in their duties, or should we say engaging in abuses if they're being abusive. Is anything like that happening in Fresno?
Well, first of all, good for whoever is doing that, because that is how you document these atrocities against people being committed by the police and other agencies of the government. You know, if you can get a camera, better still, a video camera to capture what goes on, that will go a long way to holding people accountable. You know, I was listening to your show a little earlier over the internet because, you know, we can hear it here through the internet, and you were talking about the ACLU and what they're doing here now.
What they're not doing, actually, yeah.
Well, no, actually, Robert, I know, you know, we kind of have a different view of the ACLU or a different experience.
Well, my ACLU. I mean, the ACLU in Santa Cruz. Yeah. I know the ACLU wasn't it one of the groups that got together in the Kincaid lawsuit, right?
Yeah. Real. I mean, if it wasn't for them here, I don't think that would happen. But they are opening an office in the Central Valley to do organizing. And so they're starting to put some resources out here to open an office up, have an organizer, and start pursuing some of the civil liberties violations that are taking place in the Central Valley, and of which are many. So I think that's good. And, you know, also it kind of reminds me of the situation happening out at Roding Park here, which is sort of a very big park, more or less in the central part of the city. There's a lot of homeless people that live there in the park and around the park. Just the other day, I got a call from somebody who was telling me that she and her friends are being harassed by the police, being told that they can't be in the park, that they're loitering, they're going to get a ticket, be arrested for loitering, and they're there during, you know, times when the park is open. And the police are telling them that they're there too much, that they're loitering, and they're going to get arrested if they don't leave.
Now, is this a change from prior policy? Is there some redevelopment or gentrification project happening in the neighborhood, or?
No, it sort of happens periodically. It happened a couple of years ago. A friend of mine who's homeless, Al Williams, was living out there, and they came through and threw away a bunch of his property and the property of some of his friends. And the ACLU got on it. They did send a letter to the city of Fresno chastising them for this action because the park is run by the city. And they got compensation for people's losses, and the city didn't like it. They didn't want to do that, but it was because the ACLU is still engaged here that they thought that was better than the alternative, which would have been to have a lawsuit filed against them again for taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property. And that's what that lawsuit was about a couple of years ago here. And it has had an impact, a long-term impact here, in that the city of Fresno no longer takes and immediately destroys homeless people's property. They if they're going to go in and clear out an area, they'll store the property for 90 days. People can go get their property
and
back.
And is that actually happening, or is that the fantasy scenario?
No, that happens. I mean, I've been out. I've seen them do it. They do take property, and they put it in storage. Now, they don't make it very easy for people to get it back. I don't think that they're really upholding the spirit of the law, although they probably are upholding the technical requirements of what they have to do.
Because I know that you had said about a year or two ago there was a real concern that the injunction was not being followed, but that you couldn't find attorneys who would help to really enforce it. You know, that it was, you know, that it was a problem you were having. Am I mistaken in my memory in that?
Well, I don't recollect saying that exactly, but it's not too far from the truth, because there are ongoing issues that happen. The problem is we just don't have the kind of legal firepower on an ongoing basis that it would take to defend every violation of people's civil rights here. In this case, with what's going on in Roding Park, I fully expect the ACLU or one of the attorneys that was involved with this lawsuit to follow up with the city and, you know, explain to them why they can't be doing that. And if they don't do that, I would be rather pissed.
Well, I bet you would. The question is, would the ACLU be interested in actually filing for an injunction, which is the real issue, right?
Well, I think that they're reluctant to get too involved because they're, there's an issue of distance because they are in San Francisco, and this is happening, you know, 180 miles away, 170 miles. So they, you know, don't take on cases lightly here. It would be great if this organizer that has been hired now and is going to be working in the Central Valley out of Fresno, if they are successful, I fully expect that there will be an office set up here and there will be some legal staff. And with legal staff in place, they could much more easily deal with the issues that arise.
Of course, they could always fund a local lawyer. I'm sure there are plenty of local lawyers in Fresno, some of whom have noticed the big bucks that seem to have been involved in the Kincaid $2.3 million lawsuit and might be willing to jump on board without there actually being an organizer. And forgive me for being sarcastic. Santa Cruz, I was told, has 2,000 ACLU dues-paying members and contributes by a percentage, I don't know, the largest percentage for per capita or some such thing of ACLU funding. But they don't do a shit for anything here in terms of local homeless people. So I'm pleased and hopeful to hear what you're saying, but I would be cautious because sending in a local organizer to raise funds is not the same thing necessarily as organizing a real project that involves defending the civil liberties of people locally.
Well, my understanding of the job is not that, well, one, that somebody's not coming in to do it. They hired somebody from Fresno that has some experience with Fresno scene. So the person they hired is from Fresno. And
what was he hired for is the question, you know.
Yeah, and then that's the second thing. And then the intention of what the job entails is not, as far as I understand it, is in no way to raise money for the ACLU, but it is to build relations with organizations that are active in the community and to start building a network that can address these civil liberties
issues.
Well,
That sounds more promising. You know, I think, though, that you and others spend a lot of time working on this bogus police auditor bullshit, which I think we talked about some time, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even more recently, about how, you know, how a meaningless, toothless police auditor is actually, it's almost as, it's a little worse than a toothless police board, which, you know, has the illusion of providing some kind of accountability without the substance. I mean, a lot of us folks who sat through decades of watching these, you know, phony baloney boards who form close associations with the police department, you know, they do. They don't have any real powers because of the Copley decision, which means that, you know, police personnel records can't be revealed. That is until, of course, we get some kind of decent action from the legislature, which we might, I suppose, this year. What you really need, I think, are monitoring groups of independent citizens doing things like you're doing, publicizing, filing Public Records Act requests, cop watching on the streets, distributing even old, out-of-date cell phones to homeless people so police officers will have to deal with the possibility that their behavior is going to be, photographed, even if it's not, you know.
Right. No, I agree with that, Robert. I think that the experience here of what was called the Office of Independent Review, which is basically an independent police auditor. I mean, at least that's what it was intended to look like. Was really not something that brought police accountability to the community. What it did, and you hit it right when you said it created the illusion that something was being done without any substance.
This is Bob Aronson's Fresno job. Is this what this was?
Well, he came in and kind of started the process, and he was looking at the job, but I don't think he was who they were looking for. They got somebody from Seattle that was really closely associated with police. You know, he was just in lockstep with them. He never really said anything critical about what had been done. And it put a lot of people who had been working on this, and people that I respect in the community, in a position of supporting the position but wanting to make it better and strengthen it so that it had subpoena power, so that it could issue reports independent of City Hall. But none of that ever happened. They fired this guy, as weak as he was. They fired him a couple of months ago, so we have absolutely nothing now. And maybe that's not, as bad as it would seem, because really we didn't have anything before but the illusion that there was some accountability. And now it's sort of the mask has been taken off, and everybody knows that there is, that the police just have a free hand to do whatever they want. And some of the stories that I've been reporting on Indy Bay and in our newspaper, the Community Alliance, are about this abuse of power, just chronic and escalating violence against people, and there's no restraint because they have nothing to fear. Nobody's looking over their shoulder. They are, in many ways, a gang unto themselves.
Now, what about the what's happening with people of color, with immigrants, with ICE there? Are they suffering a similar, catastrophe, if you will, of deportation under the so-called safe communities crap that Obama has said he was going to moderate, but of course has done nothing of the kind? And you have a state law which some people are pushing, but I guess recently ICE has said that's the Immigration Service, or that I guess it's not, and it's ICE, whatever the authorities were, Homeland Security, I'm not sure which federal agency covers it, but they're not going to let communities opt out of this. This has been a big issue in Santa Cruz. What's happening in Fresno around that?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, there's so many different directions I can go to on this, Robert. But, I mean, one is that I visited, it's been a while now, a while ago, a secret prison by Homeland Security that is located in downtown Fresno, where they process undocumented workers through and ship them back to Mexico. Virtually nobody knows about this gulag that we have in the downtown area, where people are taken to, process through, and whisked out of the country. That's an interesting thing. One of the things they do is they go around and just pick people up that are in the state prisons and are being released. They've served time, and they take a van around like every day and pick the ones up that are being released, and then process them through there, then drive them down to Arizona and fly them out. There's that. There's a lot of work being done here on the DREAM Act. The president of Fresno State was an undocumented student and had announced that he didn't have illegal immigration status. And that just made a lot of people go nuts here in attacking him. And he sort of became somewhat of a national figure in the leadership of trying to get the DREAM Act passed. So that's kind of a big element of the immigrant rights work here. You know, the other interesting thing that's going on is that the police are targeting immigrants at these basically checkpoints that they've set up. They say that they're for DUI, driving under the influence. They've got grants to do this. And what they do is they block off streets here in Fresno. In fact, they do that in Santa Cruz, too. I was stopped there not too long ago and by the police and asked if I'd been drinking. And, you know, then if they have any concerns, they pull you over and do a test on you. But here, what they do is they set these up primarily in the poorer neighborhoods where immigrants would live. And they stop them ostensibly to check out if they're drinking and driving. And then they, if there's anything, if they don't have a license, if they don't have insurance, if, you know, there's anything wrong, anything that shows up in the investigation, they tow the car away. And it costs about $500 to get your car out. So what's happening with a lot of immigrants here is that they lose their car, then they can't get out to work, and so and they can't afford the $500 or $600 to get their car back. So they're driving, you know, vehicles that are not well maintained, that are in disrepair, because they just abandoned them after they're towed away. They're not worth $500, in other words. So that's a phenomenon that's happening here. In fact, I wrote about, and you'll read it on Indie Bay, about this guy, and he wasn't an undocumented worker, but he had been drinking, and he drove home. Somebody saw him. They said that he was driving erratically. But the guy gets home, goes to bed, goes to sleep, and sometime later, the police come, knock on his door, enter his house without a warrant, without permission, drag him out of bed, and arrest him for being drunk and driving, even though they had never seen him. It was somebody else that called it in. And then his car, parked legally on the street, was towed away, cost him $500 to get that back. Those are the kind of things that are happening in Fresno.
Wow. How does this intersect with how homeless people are being treated and the fact that there are large homeless encampments in Fresno that are de facto not only being left alone, but that at least one of them has a porta potty, which at one point had a security guard.
Yeah, the city agreed. This is years ago now. They no longer provide any public services for homeless people whatsoever. They at one time, I talked them into putting a portable toilet up there at an encampment. And they did it under the condition that it was guarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that nobody did anything, I don't know, illegal or immoral inside the portable toilet. I will tell you, too, though, that I am personally, I've set up two portable toilets and a trash bin out at one of the larger encampments in Fresno and have been running that for, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 months now. And
You're running out of money, as I understand it, right?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, Robert, I put that appeal out there, and dang, I mean, all people came from everywhere to throw money at me to keep these things up. So I've got enough money to keep that one camp running for a year, and I've got the potential of setting them up in another camp endlessly, too. Interestingly enough, a lot of this is coming from people in the Catholic Church. It's parishes are, like, adopting these portable toilets and trash bins in the encampment. And, see, that's one of the things that happened in Fresno when the city of Fresno stopped bulldozing the encampment and leaving them alone, is that you have essentially favelas or shanty towns that have emerged in parts of downtown where there are hundreds of people that are living.
You know, so apparently you're the Ed Fry of Fresno. Ed Fry, of course, is the attorney who has now been sentenced to 6 months in jail and has served 2 weeks of that sentence for sleeping in a homeless protest. But the point is, every night he brought a porta potty to the homeless protest. This was the first homeless protest that ever really had a permanent regular porta potty, and it, that lasted for 3 months. Ed was able to do that with the help of philanthropist Paul Lee.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're following in Ed's footsteps, or Ed's following in your. You guys are following similar tracks.
Well, there's been no threat from the city about the portable toilet or trash bins.
And to the credit of Santa Cruz, they didn't this time go after the porta potties. Though last time, 10 years ago, when Camp Paradise tried to get a porta potty, the city crackdown would not allow the porta potty company to leave a porta potty there, even though it was paid for.
Wow. Well, they haven't said anything to me. Although somebody told a friend of mine, this was somebody from the city, Greg Barfield. He's the almost czar, as
he's
it were.
A friend of yours? Now, come on, you got to choose your friends better, man.
No, I'm saying a friend of mine talked to this guy, Greg Bart.
I got you. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, Greg told him like 2 nights ago that they're going to end homelessness in downtown Fresno in the next couple of months. They're going to find housing for all the people in the downtown areas that are homeless. And all I can say is, I'm not going to hold my breath for that one.
Sounds like the stink of something is rising. I'd like to talk to you more. You got a lot of stuff to tell me, Mike, but I have 20 seconds left in my show. So
better let you know that.
Hey, thank you for calling. And for people who want to check you out, it's the Community Alliance. They can Google you for Mike Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. And we'll talk to you again when we can.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Robert.
It's good hearing you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Now.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides for the streaming version. However, we do have Uncle Dennis, who's going to save the radio station by personally planting a redwood tree that will grow, and we will be able to have a new... Dennis will give you all the details about how this is being saved. Does this one actually work now? I thought this is out of order. Oh, no, there's a new one. Very interesting. A little technical byplay here in the studio. Well, that means that the Payday at Coal Creek theme song is not going to be played here because Uncle Dennis is preempting things with his own trashy 60s music. But I know that some of you are tuning in for From the Cream to the Dregs, so I'm not going to comment. But do get back to me when I come back to you, on, if I do, on Sunday when I shall return at 9:30 with actually a taped interview with Keith McHenry talking about his book, talking about Orlando and what's going on there. Just talking away as usual.
Blah, blah, blah.
And there you have it, one of my frequent and unfortunately regular critics, who I have to listen to for at least 3 minutes every week.
Could be less, Robert.
It could be less, but it usually isn't. In any case, thank you for listening to the show. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you want to huff and puff, or just huff anyway. You got to puff on your own at this point. And check me out at 9:30. And if you have a place for a transmitter, or if you know of anybody who might, well, Uncle Dennis will talk to you more about that. We need one. And if you can help, we're open to that. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and I'll talk to you next time.
Something is driving me, oh, babe. But it's something trying to. But I don't think you're gonna find anybody, not anybody, who can say that they tried like I tried. The worst you can say all about me is that I've never satisfied.